you, Mayor Simcha, for coordinating tonight's Avad. This is the pre-Eretz Yisrael Chinuch Avad. And I figured that we should pick a topic that everybody wants to talk about. I have a few random thoughts on my mind, so I'll just get that off my chest, and maybe it'll be a springboard for things that you want to hear about it. Start. So I thought I would first start out with a, I don't know if we ever discussed this one, but there's a shaila that came up to Rav Schneur Cutler Zatzal. Want to say something? No. So here was the shaila. There was a family who the parents were not Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs, and the kid was in JEP, and the kid wanted to be Shomer Shabbos. The kid was like 9 years old, or 10 years old, and the kid wanted to be Shomer Shabbos. The parents wouldn't let. Obviously, at that age, the kid did not have control. And 1 year, was first day Rosh Hashanah, and the parents wanted to go visit relatives up in the country. And the kids start kvetching, complaining, it's Rosh Hashanah, you know, I don't want to go. And the parents said, we'll make a deal with you. You've been kvetching about this for, you know, a half a year. Come with us today in the car. And, or maybe this conversation happened before Rosh Hashanah. You'll come with us first day Rosh Hashanah in the car. And after today, If you'll come with us, we won't give you a hard time anymore. We'll let you be Shomer Shabbos.
This is a 9-year-old?
Like a 10-year-old. Yeah, 10, 11-year-old.
Does the fact that he's not included in Mitzvah's
father? And one second. So the JEP leaders, the JEP leaders went and they asked their Rebbe, it was Rav Schneur. They asked Rav Schneur, Zatzal, What should we tell the kid? Lemaisa, he hasn't been able to be Shomer Shabbos because the parents, you know, take him in the car. He can't fight them. And now they're offering that if he'll go with them to some very important event, evidently, first Erev Hashanah. After that, they won't give him a hard time anymore. They'll let him keep Shabbos. Can he agree to it?
No.
So I want to see what you guys thought. I know what Rav Schneur said. So
some of the parents won't keep up with the class.
Okay.
Okay.
So you say you can't believe the parents, therefore don't give in.
If they're serious, then they're backing down already. Yeah, parents don't want to. So it doesn't matter.
Yes or no?
Oh, contrarian.
No, Mayor Simcha. Do it. It's worth the trade.
Yes.
I mean, sometimes until that point, it's not like he could be Shomer Shabbos. They were going in cars anyway. Now they just didn't want to complain about it.
If you follow, so that's why you allow him to do it. Anyways,
allow him to do it because he's doing it anyway.
He's being forced to, so he's forced one more time and then never again. But if he doesn't, then he's just going to be forced to in the future anyway.
If you follow the... You're allowed to give up some mitzvahs as a compromise.
So you say no?
No.
If you value utilitarianism, because you weigh the maximum pleasure versus the maximum cost. So
where's Judaism?
Yeah.
Then if you go according to that,
yeah,
you tell them to do it.
To do it.
But we don't go according to that in Judaism. So, yeah.
All right. Okay, fine. Okay, you said both. You said you were hedging your bets. You said both as far as, yeah. Yeah. What do you say, Aaron? It's a good trade.
Yeah.
You're trading up.
What does it mean that
you're trading up? You give up one. Yeah, Avram.
Yeah, but you won't get into the present.
What?
Right now, the only choice. Right now, you can find you have to keep Rosh Hashanah. After that, you'll figure out what to do. But you can't trade.
Can't.
No, Esther did. No.
Wait, he's equipped to fight.
Esther said that pays up now. Right? You don't email to them now, so you could email to them in the future.
Ooh.
Right? So don't do Shabbos now. You do Shabbos in the future. And we'll trade one Natchez for thousands and millions of other
Okay, no, you say yes, yeah, Kiva? That way he's not Mechuyev now. He's under Bar Mitzvah.
In 3 years, he'll actually be Mechuyev. So
in 3 years, he'll be able
now
to.
Now, when he's, he'll do it when he's 10.
Now, when
he's 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
So he's saying it's a good trade.
Yeah, good trade.
It's a good trade. You gotta think smart. Daniel, what do you say? Akiva, like Akiva. Anybody else want to weigh in?
If I was his parent, I would think that they were just doing it to show him that
they're keeping Shabbos.
Okay,
no,
fine.
I don't think the chinuch.
So I want to tell you what I want to tell you a couple of thoughts. Yes, sir.
Isn't it the same length as the current inviting a guest walking to your house in the current Shabbos?
Isn't like what?
Inviting a guest who will come to your house in the current Shabbos.
Inviting guests to your home for the current Shabbos, I mean to Bukhar of them, but I don't know.
No, because you're not telling them to come to your house.
I don't know. I'm not sure that plays in, but if it does play in, it's too confusing for me to think about how they relate. So let's keep the Shaila separate. That happens to be also a very complex Shaila, but different poskim. Reshiva hold not to do that, but many poskim hold you could do it. So, okay, I just want to say what Rosh Shnei said. But on the same topic, let's say you have a parent, like a kid like wants to learn a yeshiva, and his parents, not that this would get anyone here, but his parents want him to not go to yeshiva and go to college, and make a deal. Okay, you go to college next year, and after that, we'll fund you. You could learn for 5 years straight.
Yeah,
so,
that's totally different.
Do you do that?
No.
Go to college, drop out, go party,
No.
Yeshiva.
No. Are you talking about someone's yeshiva?
No, you don't do that. Go to YU.
If you're not going up, you're going down.
Okay.
So
I'm just looking at. So I just wanted to see over. There's a klal. There's a basic klal. We do not trade ruchnius now for ruchnius later. Okay, we don't trade. So if you have an opportunity to do ruchnius now, we do it now. Yeah. That was a general. General doesn't mean a psak for today. That's just. You know, in general. But Rav Schneier said to the Shaila, I heard a lot of you, it's very interesting. Rav Schneier said it's a svara, not based, a lot of you said halachic renderings, which may be true. But he says, you heard the Shaila. I don't know if you ever heard the Shaila. Rav Schneier said, what kind of Yiddishkeit will he have knowing that his Yiddishkeit was the foundation of his Yiddishkeit was Chilul Shabbos. Huh. Everyone's Yiddishkeit gets tested. Well, every one of us, the Yitzhara will test us no matter, the stronger you are, the bigger tzaddik you are, the bigger Yitzhara you have. That's just the way it is. And I should never become a tzaddik. That doesn't work either. So the stronger you are, the stronger it's going to get tested. And if deep down he knows that his frumkeit is hinged, is based on Chilul Shabbos, so what kiyum will it have? That's what Schneider said. It's very interesting. Therefore, he told them they shouldn't do it. And just it's very good when you're dealing with. I always like to talk about topics like this because, it's before the summer. Even yeshiva bachrim, very often end up working as counselors and dealing with, younger kids and shilas come up, questions come up, what they do. It's very important. The chinuch that they have when they are young stays with them. I saw interesting shiloh over here. This is Reb Zilberstein's sefer on chinuch. I can't remember who got this from me. All this from Hamakina people got from me. I have no idea, why they got me. Probably want to teach me how to do chinuch. Probably. I never have time to read it. But in preparation for tonight, okay, you guys play the. I like to ask it as a shaila because then we get everyone's input. Okay, the yeshiva has a choice. Okay, they ask the shout to the Chazon Ish. Do you hire? You have two choices for Rebbe. It doesn't say which grade, so I'll let you decide which grade it is. Do you hire the Rebbe that's a Baal Midos or the Rebbe that's a Talmid Chacham? Hold on. Okay.
So your answer is to the end of the question.
In other words, the person who has the Midos Tovos is not a Lamdan. I just want to clarify what he is and what he isn't. He has Midos Tovos, but he is not a Lamdan or a Chacham Gadol B'Torah. It doesn't say he does not learn. I assume he can't be a Rebbe. He doesn't learn anything. But he's not a Lamdan or a Chacham Gadol B'Torah. I don't know how you want to translate that. I don't know his grade, his grid. I don't know how he grades it. So who do you hire? The Talmud Chacham? Okay. I feel after this. Let's call, I don't know, older grades. I don't know. Let's call young grades. It's easier, Shaila. Now, the person's capable of teaching the fourth grade class, okay? Talmud Chacham, or someone who's not a Lamdan or Chacham Gadol B'Torah, but he's a Baal Midos Tavos. Who do we hire? Now, the Talmud Chacham, he knows how to teach. It's not like he doesn't know how to teach. They both have excellent pedagogy and chinuch. They went to all the chinuch haburis. They don't teach. One's Talmud Chacham. Huh? No, we're deciding fourth grade. The Shalas are fourth grade. Otherwise, I'm asking. Talmud Chacham.
Talmud Chacham. Or people remember
Talmud
Chacham.
How do you learn Talmud Chacham? Okay, Akiva says the Baal Midos Tovos. I mean, Moshe. Who's Moshe? Yeah.
Akiva said that no one's going to remember what you learned in fourth grade. People are going to remember how you were treated or how like, you were.
Okay, so we have Akiva Moshe. Okay. He says the guys will get turned on more to a Baal Midos. Very good. Yeah.
I'm a Nazi.
Does anyone here say Talmud Chacham? No. Yosef, yeah, let's hear it.
Why? He won't know how to teach a Rosh.
We're a
Chavos
Chaim Yeshiva. He will not teach a Rosh.
Every time I heard the recording from Israel, there was so much background noise, and I just wondered why there's so much background noise.
So, anyway, it's very interesting. So he asked this question to the Chazon Ish, and he says, the Iker Chinuch in the younger grades is the Mechanech, a child from Midos Tovos. And therefore, when the learning gets difficult and it's hard for the children, so a Baal Midos is able to relate to the Midos of the child. And therefore, He will better be able to deal with the children. Yeah, right. I said that even the Talmud Chacham, he knew pedagogy, but this is very important. You know, they say when they wrote the Rav Moshe book, the family said not to write about his godless in Torah because there's no point in that. And the nobody could learn anything from that. And
they did anyway.
Did they?
Yeah,
majorly.
But they should write about the Midos of the Rav Moshe Feinstein. That's what a child learns from. So that's what they did. I said over a mice at the kindergarten graduation. So I say it over here. I said I would speak. Three reshivas, there are three kindergarten graduations. So we said one Rosh Yeshiva will speak by each graduation this year. I came there, and
we got the parents or the kids.
The one second. So I got there. So they said, they had us speaking at the end, but I said no. It's better if we speak at the beginning. I don't want to have to stay for the whole thing. So they said okay. So we'll speak at the beginning. So they came over to me and said, okay, so I'm calling you up now. So I said, the kids aren't in the room. The kids aren't here. Says, oh, no, we can't have the kids come because they're trained to practice that they come in and they start performing. So you can't speak while the kids are here. So I said, who am I speaking to? So all the parents. So all the parents without the kids there, then this is not a graduation, then that's like supper in someone's house. So I can't. So I'll speak when the kids are here. Says, okay. So I said, all right, I said, well, one second, they're 4 years old. They're 5 years old. I don't know if I ever spoke to 5 year olds before. So I had to basically scrap 80% of my preparation. I just didn't chop that there are 5 year olds there. Like I just didn't chop sitting in their gowns and tassels and you know, they just sat down and so I had to speak. So I had to change this to literally a 90-second shotgun. And I spoke to the kids and I said, okay, boys and girls, you're terrific. But I want to say over this maestro, but it's maestro, a fantastic maestro. So there was one yeshiva, I guess I won't say the name of the yeshiva. Even though it's in the Rabbi Yaakov book, the name of the yeshiva, but I don't want to say the name of the yeshiva because it could be somebody might perceive that someone did something incorrect, which they did. But anyway, when they built a new elementary school, so in the preschool, they put the mezuzahs very low so the kids could kiss the mezuzahs. So when Rabbi Yaakov came to visit that yeshiva, so he saw the mezuzah and he called over the manal and he said, that's not how we do it. If you want to teach the kids to kiss the mezuzah, you put the mezuzah in the correct place, in the bottom of the top third, and you put a chair next to the doorpost. So if the kid wants to kiss the mezuzah, they can stand on the chair and kiss the mezuzah. So, and it's a message that the kids have to, you know, rise past their comfort level, so to speak, to perform a mitzvah. This is a very important concept. This could I just say over it. Many times that the mechanchim, and this could be true for even counselors, the different types. What do you do? You want to relate to the kids, so you want to, you can go where they are, so to speak, come down to them, or you have to sort of like when you teach a kid how to ride a bike, you have them ride, and then right before they're gonna fall, you catch them. Like you try to teach a kid to walk, you stay like, if the kid trying to take one step, you stay a step and a half away from him. So he takes a step, and then he almost takes the next step, and you catch him. Then you go two steps away, and there's a step, you know. And the same way with riding a bike. First, you teach it to do like one spin, and then two spins. You got to have the kid reach for a little bit higher. And a master knows the small bites with a Y that they're, you know, that they can take. And Mimela, it's just a concept to not go down to their level, not expect them to go up to your level either, not too high, but you have to sort of have just a little past where they are, you know, just a little past. It's very important. I've seen people do it, you know, like they think they're relating to the kids by going down to their level, but at the end of the day, Lemaisa, the kids know that even though they'll kvetch and they'll complain that it's too hard, you know, I just listen to all these speeches by graduation, you know, like I hear, you know, every year the 12th graders, present 12th graders excluded, from this. You hear them complaining like, oh yeah, it was so hard, but you know, now we're all past it. Then like the minute after graduation, they go back to it really is that's when the greatest feeling of ecstasy is when you grow. There's a Tosa Siyantif, I believe, in the beginning of fourth parak in Pirkei Avos, which says that one of the Amoraim, I think it was Amora, maybe it was a Tana, said that he was riding on going on a boat. He got to go on a trip, and he could not afford the coach economy fare, so they put him in with the cargo. So he went with the cargo. So he was, they let him stay with the cargo. He carries all the luggages. And then one of the Gvirim from first class, you know, came down to cargo, and he sees this schlepper, looked like a schlepper, this vagabond, sitting with the, you know, living with the all the cargo, and he was like resting there. So the Tosfos Yontif says it. So I'm repeating it exactly the way it says it. And this Gvir went and he urinated on this passenger, and the Tosi of the writes that this, I believe it was this Amor or Tana, said that at that moment he dehared that all his life he was working on the Mida of Kavod and Anivus, that he realized that he felt Rachmanis for that person. He didn't get angry, and he realized that he had reached a high Madrega in Ben Am L'Chavero, and he didn't know. He was working on it like for years, maybe even decades. He just never had the opportunity to see that he had grown in this area. And when he saw that he was able to be Sovil, what the average person would have done if someone did that to them. So when he saw that he was able to be Sovil, that he declared that all these years he had grown tremendous amount. It said it was the happiest day of his life. This was the happiest day of his life. So this is a very good point to realize that what's going to make the kid happy? What's going to make the kid happy is if you give him a challenge that he can overcome. There's nothing you can do. You can't give him a 100 on the test. Won't help. There's nothing you could do. I mean, this is... Akiva, you keep this one quiet. The guys in the class, like when we announced that there's finals coming up, so there's a Gemara final also. So yeah, there's a Gemara final, and there's whatever. The kid said, Rebbe, could you just tell us that we're going to get the same grade no matter what we get on the test, then but I'll study very good for it. Yeah right. You know, that, no, that's not that's not usually... Then that doesn't make them feel good. The happiest feeling is when you take a challenge and you overcome the challenge, and memela, you feel like you accomplished something. That's the real simcha. Now, how do you get a kid to overcome a challenge? It's very difficult. It's hard work to overcome a challenge. It's very hard. First of all, you have to be presented with the challenge. So it's sort of like, you know, training to run uphill. It's very, very hard. And any good trainer knows that, a physical trainer, that if, you know, no pain, no gain. And the pain is torture. You have to get them now to do 3 miles, then 4 miles, and then a 4 incline, a 5 incline, and then, you know, 2 push-ups, and 3 push-ups, and 4, and then 10. And each time, he's sweating profusely. He curses you that he, oh, finally finished with that guy. But he feels he's growing. That's when a person really feels he's accomplishing. So that's a very, very hard job. You have to mamish harva. And if you're teaching a class and you have multiple, you know, different people at different levels, so a good mechanech has got to keep cheshbon all simultaneously where each guy is holding. And he has to be able to move in and out between one and the other, all these things going on. You know, like I always marvel if you ever watch football. So like you know, the quarterback has good, precise throws, and he could throw it far and deep and on target. That's not what makes a good quarterback. The guy probably wouldn't last 2 days and 2 weeks in the league. Well, the guy has to be able to read defense. No one here is a professional quarterback, but reading a defense, that the big quarterbacks, they know how to read it. They know read. And we don't even get up to that. You know, how do you read a defense? You take the ball, you throw it as far as you can, and hopefully you have a good wide receiver who can catch it. That's the level that most people are at, you know? But someone that's much more, you know, that takes sophistication and it takes a lot of work. I just heard this from a member of the family. Is Usher here? It wasn't from you, but I heard from a member of the family. Rabbi Goldenberg, your grandfather. So Rabbi Goldenberg taught here at Torah Semes. I don't want 70 years. 30 years? In that vicinity. 30 years. And I just heard this recently. So he taught first grade for 30 years. He did teach also. He had the second half of the day. I think later on, he taught first grade morning and afternoon. But at one point when there was only one first grade, he taught third grade and first grade, or first grade and third grade.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but even in the end, when he was teaching first grade the whole day, I was told that, this is so hard to believe, that every single night he prepared all night long. I don't know if you ever heard this story, to the extent that I don't know what the word frequent means. Frequent doesn't mean multiple times a week, but that some nights he didn't even change into pajamas so that he wouldn't have to waste time so that he could prepare. And he was up sometimes till 3-4 in the morning preparing for the next day's class. First grade. First grade. No, I'm telling you, first grade. Because he had multiple worksheets for different types of kids, and he constantly perfected, you know, having different kids overcome their next challenge. So, and I heard the same thing, Rabbi Moshe Kassira Zatzal, and who was ninth grade Rebbe in Queens, also taught there for 40 years. I heard the same thing from his son, that his father was teaching 40 years, and even in the end, he still prepared every single night to late hours preparing. Not the material, I assume it wasn't, you know, shot in the Gemara. I assume he was preparing how he's going to teach it. And getting someone to overcome their challenge, whatever it is the mechanech's job is to figure out. Doesn't only mean teaching the mechanech anywhere. You have to get the kid to meet this challenge. So what's the job of a counselor? Okay, the job of a counselor. Okay, you know, you just want to go and you should have a good time. Well, we're gonna do this activity, that activity, but it's more to it. That's a very shallow approach. You know, if you want to be ultimately give the kids something that's a gift. So, Rabbi Luben said at the high school graduation last night that it says, "Kosavarchu as Bnei Yisrael." So, if you, those that were, you know, that were there, he said they learn now from the word "ko" that you should. The Zohar says you should not teach more than 25 children. What's the source? Not teach more than 25 in a class, because it says "ko." The Zohar says, it says ko gematria is 25 Zavarku. So Rabbi Luben asked the Kasha, where do you see from there? It's talking about teaching ko Zavarku Neisrael. He's referring to, you know, 25. You know, you should maybe take a lulav in front of 25. You should daven in front of 25. How do you know who said it's talking about teaching? And the Pirish that he was quoting said that the way you know it was teaching, because the ultimate bracha you can give to someone is is the gift of learning. Kosa Varku, you're blessing someone, giving someone a bracha, the ultimate bracha you're giving them is, I don't think it's his own shot.
I think he said it was. No,
yeah.
Right?
No, I don't think so.
The Zohar quoted Rava saying
okay, whatever.
I don't remember exactly. The point is that you want to give the kids.
You want to be mechanech. If anyone that has jobs anywhere, you're working with kids. You have to. Your job is to help them overcome a challenge. So, okay. I remember when I was a counselor. You speak to many kids. It only takes one Rebbe to get a kid turned on to whether it be davening or learning. The one Rebbe that gets them turned on and he's there for the rest of his life, that's ultimate. It says in the Sefer here that a Rebbe's job should teach a kid how to lose in basketball, lose a game. You teach him how to lose. You teach him midos tovus. And I have a kid who told me that when he was in graduated 12th grade, I was speaking to him here in Torres Chaim. He graduated, 20 years ago, and he told me that when he graduated, he was so happy. Why? He said because when he was in 9th grade, he took an oath that. He loves basketball, but he's not going to make a basket until he graduates high school.
Why?
Because when he was in seventh grade, he shot up. He was like 6 feet when he was in seventh grade, and by the time he got to eighth grade, he had no friends. Because when he's playing basketball, he's very competitive, and he won every game. And he realized he had no friends. When he got into ninth grade, he realized he had no friends. He had to decide, and he had this conversation with himself: Do you want to win basketball games, or do you want to have friends? And he decided that he'd rather have friends than win basketball games. So he made. I would not have told him to do this. So he didn't consult with me, but I would have maybe tried something else. But he took his own self oath that he's not going to make another basket while he was in 12th grade. And Taka, I remember him when he was in eighth grade. He was like super. Like I was always wondering like why he like spazzed out after that. You have like this tall, lanky person playing basketball who always misses every shot. He's like, So. He purposely missed every shot. You know how good you have to be to miss every shot? So this kid figured it out. So like here you have a kid who on his own did that. Now, if any Rebbe would have spent any time, they would figure out like what's going on with this kid. No one sat down and spoke to him. He could have found out. It's amazing what you could find out. You talk to a kid, you find out. Oh my gosh, let's say the 10th grade Rebbe, 11th grade Rebbe would have had a conversation with him. Would have figured out that, he used to be. He would have told. As someone asked him, he would have said. Huh?
Someone should have asked.
Yeah, for sure. No, someone had to notice first. First, you have to notice, then you could ask. You have to notice.
A lot of times,
people are just—they have a lot to say, but you have to first notice before they're going to tell you. They're not going to tell you their problems. And if they just say, "How are you?" and he starts telling you all his problems. Then the guy's deranged. You got to put him in asylum. Usually you don't tell your problems if someone says, "How are you?" They don't really mean, "How are you?" I just say, "Baruch, I'm fine." You're not supposed to say, but If you sit there, you see somebody sometimes in shul or a kid, and you have a conversation, you know, how you doing, and you actually wait to listen to what they answer, then you'd be surprised. You really could find out a lot of things. You see a kid, you know. I was a counselor once in camp. I was must have been 19, and I woke up the way I heard kids talking. I heard one kid say, "Next year, I'm not going to be able to come to camp because by then, my mother will have croaked." Oh my gosh, that's so sad.
What does croak mean?
Pass away.
Oh.
So I reported it to the head counselor. I went to the head counselor. I don't know how to deal with that situation. My mother's not well. I didn't know. Told me. And the next day, the kid comes over to me, and he says, "Oh, by the way, I said broke, not croak."
Then he
explains to me that he has four or five brothers and sisters, and they're all going to camp.
Oh, yeah.
So there's no way they can afford it again next year. So next year, his mother will be broke. I was half asleep. You know,
Hey,
you know.
If you're poor, it's like you're dead. No?
And he said, broke. So it happens to be that it was a crazy bunk I had, and the next day or 2 days later, I woke up, and I see the kids all like talking, and it's like way before wake up. It's like an hour and a half before wake up. And they're on camp times. It gets early, really early. It gets light really early. And I see, like, the kids around, but there's one kid not there. So I asked the kids, "Where's Elliot?" So they didn't answer me. I said, "Where's Elliot?" So they said, "Okay, Elliot ran away." "What? What do you mean, Elliot ran away?" He says, "He ran away." So anyway, I got out of bed. This is the same bunk for the kid who said broke. I just told the head counselor, you know, when you're a first year or second year counselor, you don't want to talk to the head counselor. It's not a good thing. Stay away from the head counselor. So anyway, it was like 5:30 in the morning, camp time. So I looked around. He's not there. So who do you tell? I had no idea. So I went to the head counselor, you know, and I went and it was such an interesting story. I just realized why it's interesting. So I went, I knew where the head counselor lived in the bungalow, and I knew he was there by himself because his wife was expecting, so she was in New York. She was in New York, so he was there by himself, so I knew that. So I went into the bungalow, and he didn't answer the front door. So I went inside, I banged on his bedroom door, and he said, "What's wrong?" So I said who it was, and I said, "I'm sorry to wake you, but there's a boy in my bunk who's not in the bunk. It's 5:30 in the morning, and the boys say he ran away. What should I do?" So he says, "Did you check the bathroom?" So I said, "Do you think I would wake up the head counselor having not checked the bathroom first?"
No, no, no.
He said, "Yes. Did you check the bathroom?" So anyway, it's just the reason why I realized that's a funny story because
what happened? Was he in the bathroom?
He wasn't.
He was not in the bathroom. No, he ran away. I'll tell you the other
thing. Oh, he was in the bathroom.
No, he ran away. But I just realized why that's a funny story because that head counselor ended up 6 years later to be my father-in-law, and no, that's really pretty funny. I just realized what's a funny story. Is Yehuda Teigman still here?
What's it, you and running
so,
away?
No, it was Yehuda Teigman's mother that was about to be born. She was born like the week later. So that's what was funny. So I just realized that as I'm telling the story. But anyway, it turned out that the kid did run away. They called the parents. Parents got very alarmed. They did not. Then they called us back that their son called. He hitched a ride to the bus station and got on a Kanyunga bus to Monticello.
Why?
He was running away. The bus driver let him on. The bus driver. This kid's 12 years old. A 12-year-old kid, you know, ran away. And then they found the kid and, you know, brought him back to camp.
It was broke.
And the director of the camp ran out and went to Monticello when the authorities called and brought him back to camp, and then they kicked him out.
Sorry, son.
Wait, why did he run away?
You win.
I don't know. He was homesick. I have no idea. That's a crazy bunk.
He's crazy.
You got to be on the ball also. Sometimes you just have to notice. Sometimes if you just ask a kid how are you, and then you listen. I had this mice with a doctor, like a bunch of years ago. I ended up with I got my gallbladder out, and I didn't know what it was. I had like stomach pains, so it was getting better. It was getting worse. Getting better. And my wife had an appointment by a doctor. Like, it was during midwinter vacation on a Thursday night. So I went with her. And I went to the doctor's office and I said, I'm in such pain. But then it was getting better. So he says, you know, he's staring at me and he says, you know, I think you should go to the emergency room next door. I'll call them. Then let me just take a test. They took a test and found out that I needed emergency gallbladder. Okay, emergency gallbladder operation. Take out my gallbladder. Got infected. I don't even know what a gallbladder is.
Somewhere here.
But anyway, they took it out. Had I not gone to the doctor, I wouldn't have made it because it got infected and I had sepsis. I was really sick. I not been in the hospital when this happened, so like 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, I went back to the doctor afterwards. I was home already, and I said, "You saved my life. What made you tell me to go to the emergency room?" He had no idea. You can't see a gallbladder. Look at my arm. Open wide. Ah. What made you tell me to go to the emergency room? You saved my life. So he said a good word, and it could be applied to, you know, chinuch. He said, when I was in medical school, I had a mentor, a professor, is an elderly gentleman, and he said, and when you're diagnosing your patients, okay, anyone wants to go into medicine, it's good to keep in mind also, when you're diagnosing your patients, if you want to know what's wrong with them, listen to them. They will tell you what's wrong with them. They're the best ones that can tell you. So I know you, the doctor says, I know you, and I was chai, when you asked me what to do, I was just thinking of all the words that you said, and that's not like you to make something sound a little bit serious. You were like a little bit concerned, and that's what was going over, that's what I was thinking about in my head. And that's why I told you to go check it out, because you listen to the doctor. When a kid, you ask a kid how he's doing, you gotta ask him every day how he's doing. He will. But if one day he says, you know, like my father's Holy Racha, every time you ask, he didn't like talking about himself. I would call him every year on his birthday, and he hated it. That was the worst phone call. He hated talking about himself. So when he would call me very seldom. I called him. Kid calls your father, calls his father. He called me once a year on his birthday. This way, he doesn't, like, if I call him, we have to talk about his birthday. If he calls me, he asks me how I'm doing. I said, "Oh, Dad, happy birthday." Yeah. You know, and we change the subject. When he was sick, he got sick. He passed away during COVID. And I asked him how he was. He went to the hospital with COVID. And I asked him, "Dad, how you feeling?" And he said, "So-so." He passed away the next day. When he said so, when I hear my father say so, that's I'm trying to relate it. When I heard him say so, I told my wife, "That's my father to say so." That's like very bad, you know, he must be very bad. We knew it was very bad because his lungs were affected. He didn't get sick. He was, you know, he just had no lung capacity. But you could hear from, and that's why you have to always be around, always ask the kids how they're doing. And then one day when they say, you know, okay, but they don't sound the same, like, you know, raise your hand if you don't live in Miami. Okay, so tell me the truth. You guys, when you call home, okay, well, you flew in, right? Yeah, you don't count. So Aaron doesn't count for this question, but everyone else who raised their hand does. When you call home, you speak to your parents, how many words do you think you need to say before they figure out, okay, what's wrong? They could tell by how you say hello.
Yeah, they know right away.
They know, okay, what's wrong? What's wrong?
You just say hello, it's a tone of voice.
Hello, hello, mom. Hello, mom. Oh my gosh, what's wrong? I'm coming immediately. I'm bringing Abba, you know. That's what you have to know.
Nothing's wrong. What's wrong?
You have to know the kids so well that once they just say how they're doing, you could tell, and you have to be able to relate. I met a guy. One of my chaverim was a reshiva in one of the branches. We'll leave his name out. He called me up once. He says, you know, there's a fellow who davens. In the Young Israel, in one of the shuls, and I knew who that person was, and he's having a lot of psychological problems with his family. His parnos is no good. I'm very worried about him. You know, I'm over here, you know, far away, and you're right there. And could you like spend some time with him? So I said, of course. I knew this fellow. I said, wow. So I'm so sorry to hear. Of course I'm going to help out. I'm just, you know him from somewhere? He says, no, I don't know him from somewhere. So how do you know he has all these problems? He says, well, I thought when I was in town, he's related to someone here, and I was davening in that shul on Shabbos, and, you know, he told me, said, he just, like, walked over to tell you? Like, he's like, is he, like, you know, yeah. It's like something wrong with him? He says, No, he didn't come over and tell me. I asked him. I said, how'd you know to ask him? He said, no, I didn't. I just asked him how he was doing it. And then he just started telling me. I said, you just asked him, how are you? And he told you all this? So he said, no. And then he told me basically what I'm telling you right now is what he told me. He said, basically, I asked how he's doing. And, you know, I heard from his answer. This Rashiv is like very klug. He's very good with people. And he asked the person, you know, he heard how he answered. He says, why, what's this and that? And he eventually got to a whole, full-blown, serious situation. I spent the next 4 years talking to this guy. 4 years. In the fourth year, I made a Seder with him. I said, you know, I really wish I had more time to learn. Do you have any time to learn with me? You know, I'm so busy, and I learned with him. I found time, like, I think Friday afternoons at, like, 4 o'clock, I made a Seder to learn with him on some Sefer that he wanted to learn that I never learned before, which I couldn't even translate. And we learned together. And I did it just, after 4 years, he told me, finally told me, everything I knew already from this, my chaver. And after 4 years, he felt close enough to tell me the whole story. So whatever, you know, when they're ready to talk.
Why did it take Rebbe 4 years?
I don't know. I do not know. I guess because I'm.
So that means.
As I like to tell people, don't take this the wrong way, but I'm messed up. Okay, no, because it took me. I didn't connect with. I wasn't able to connect with him. So I helped him maybe other ways, but I wasn't able to connect with him. It took after 4 years, I was able to connect with him, and whatever. But sometimes if you catch a person the right time and you show that you care, they're happy to share with you, but you have to be ready to listen. You have to be ready to hear. So it's like a Talmud, that's what the Chazani said that a Rebbe who is a Baal Midos is better to choose for sure for the younger grades. I suspect older, but we only discussed the fourth grade tonight.
Why? Because that Rebbe will be able to relate to the kid's problems better and be able to fix their problems, and that's the ikker for sure for the younger grades. I probably think it's true by the older grades also, and you know the kids. If you heard by those that were around for the senior Shabbos, we have any seniors here. Most of the Talmidim who expressed themselves Hakoras Hatov to the Rebbeim, there were very few who, if any, I don't think anyone said that his Chedushim was so amazing, I get so inspired by seeing his Koach HaChiddush. And even though there are some Rebbeim who do have Koach HaChiddush, you know, they do, but they that's not what they said. That the Rebbe cared for me, and the Rebbe was always available for me, and when I had a problem, he helped with me, and he forced me to do this or this. Like they were not that they said great kedushim, or they got me to think more than I ever did before. Like, that's not his godless in Torah. His godless was he got me to think. Means he pushed me to do it, to do something. So ultimately, that is where all of the action is. We want to have an impact on others, and you don't have to be a big mechanech to do that. You could be just davening in shul and talking to someone, asking how they're doing, and you sense that something is amiss, and you said and you can tell the person, don't be embarrassed. You said, it sounds like something's not 100%. Is you're okay? And vizel, that's. That's it. Yeah, it's very important. That's it. It affects so many things. Okay, I didn't ask stop for any questions, but
is it feasible to ask every kid every day how he's doing?
Sure. I didn't do it this year because it's a much smaller class. But last year there were 17 kids in my class, so it's hard to figure out who's there, who's not there. You have to really you have to really take attendance. So I used to take attendance last year, and the reason why I took attendance. I put on you guys remember, right?
Yeah.
I put on a niggin just to make it, b'chleibedig. And I did that only so be able to say, I want to be able to say hello to every Talmud, and then I'd have to take attendance, I took attendance myself. Okay, let's learn. But I did, I said, okay, Avraham Aminov, and I get to hear how he says, here, and I would tell them, here. Come on, say hello. Here, do it with some gusto. I would, I'd prod them to how to say that you are here, so that I did that, so that I could know what it sounds like when it's geschmack, and on the day that he goes, something like less than that, I'll know something's amiss. That's the reason why I did that. So,
did it work?
It definitely worked. Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, there are some people who were like.
No, some guys just weren't there, but.
Yeah.
I was
in your face.
Oh.
So even like 20. Like 20, and you'll learn in that short amount of time, like with 20 kids. Like,
you could tell it one time. Tell it one time.
Here, stay here.
Oh my gosh.
You can tell it one time.
It comes with practice, no? To find those subtle tone differences and you can't just like you're not born with a trait. Or like the more you do it, the more you know the guy, then the more like someone says okay. Or like it's a matter of tone difference and stuff like that. No?
A very astute 5-year-old, I'm not making fun right now. A very astute 5-year-old can tell that something's wrong with mommy today. An astute 5-year-old.
Because of like
what's wrong? What's wrong
of her, like the way she's acting,
yeah.
Just like
yes, and a 5-year-old. I'm saying 5 as opposed to 4. I don't know why I said 5, but I think 5. A 5-year-old can tell something's amiss. So I don't think this. I think it's in here. If you care about the person, you'll be able to tell. I don't think it takes great chachma. You just have to be attentive. If you're attentive, listen. Every couple. Has to deal with that, the wife wants the husband to realize that she had a very hard day. So, I didn't know you had a hard day. Well, why not?
Divorce.
Don't you see that I said this or I did that? They expect you to figure it out. That's why couldn't you figure it out? Are you dumb? The answer is yes, but, you know, okay, you know, so that's, we can't talk, not talking about that in my house. We talk about that in yeshiva. You know, that's stuff we talk about in yeshiva. But that, yeah, be astute. It's very good training, you know, to try. You do it with each other, by the way. You know, you don't have to do it with the kids. But if you have a chaver or chavrusa and you see something's wrong, you could tell your chavrusa, you know, something's bothering you today, I could tell. And they may appreciate that. It's a good opening. He says, no, everything's good. Okay, he doesn't want to talk about it. It's fine. You don't have to say, no, I don't want to talk about it. Hey, he doesn't want to talk about it. But
is there a point of prodding?
You have to, you know, if you know the person and you think he really does, just, hey, you can tell me. I think the most important thing is that they should know it's confidentiality. You never, ever, 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 ever reveal what someone tells you in confidence. Never.
Unless it's a safety.
Are they saying he's taking drugs?
Never. Oh, no. Unless it's, you know.
Dangerous.
Yeah, unless he's dangerous himself with the others. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
What about spiritual danger?
Be careful. Be careful with that. Spiritual danger. He's not washing negelvasser any, you know.
No, like more like eating on kosher.
Even Chal Shabbos on his phone every day.
Like spiritual danger, but not by far.
I'll tell you a story that happened once on that. So, in the old building, there was a boy who was in a car accident, but he didn't want to tell his parents. So, and the car got smashed. You know, he brought the car into an auto body shop, got it fixed, but he ran a red light. So he got like 5 points, but his insurance was going to go up, so they were going to find out and kill him. So he had to go to an auto school to get the points off. So he's going to auto school. The problem was he was in 10th grade. And how's he going to get permission to miss school? So who was going to give him permission to go to auto school? It was like from, you know, 9 to 11:30, you know, it's prime time. So he told his Beis Medrash Chavrusa. I don't know if the Beis Medrash Chavrusa did the right thing or the wrong thing. I think he did the wrong thing, except because he didn't know me well enough. He didn't know me well enough to have banged on this. But had he known me well enough, he did the right thing, because he told me I was the principal, and I never, ever, ever would reveal that information. Never let it out. But how did he know I wouldn't tell, and then he'll ruin his relationship with the Beis Medrash, with the high school kid?
He probably didn't know you wouldn't tell.
How could he have known? How could anyone know? I never would tell. But had the Beis Medrash guy known that I wouldn't tell, then it would be okay. But so he came over and told me. So I have this kid now who's basically left school, you know, a 10th grader, and went like 2 miles away to a total secular area. I'm supposedly, you know, watching the kids, make sure they're in school. And now these kids' safety is compromised, right? Parents think he's in school. And I had a basically promise I wasn't going to tell. So
what did he tell you?
He told me because he also knew that the kid told him something and that's like maybe dangerous. So I went in, I decided I'd do like this. I went into the classroom and I asked the Rebbe, you know, I went in, you know, I made some excuse to go into the classroom to give him a form. You know, when you have a chance, fill this out. Okay, probably says, you know, the date and the time and what time it is. And then as I'm walking out, I said, oh, where's so-and-so? I see so-and-so's not here. He goes, oh, yeah, he must be here. He just walked out. So, okay, fine. So I go out, that didn't work. So I wait 10 minutes, and I come another excuse to go in. And I said, oh, okay, fine, you give me that sheet back now. And, I see that so-and-so is not here. Do you know where he is? No. So I go looking around, even though I know he's not there. And I check half hour later. Kid's still not in the room. I said, where is he? I asked his friends, do you know where he is? So I said, go check, see if he's in the restroom. So he went to the restrooms, not in the restrooms, and I said, okay. I didn't even tell the Rebbe. So I asked the Rebbe, could you please, you know, call the parents, find out if they know anything. Maybe they picked them up. Called the parents, no, we don't know anything. Then 15 minutes later, I called the parents, said, you know, your son's, you're missing. He says, what? He's in school, we brought him to school today. And they call me back, goes, we just spoke to him. He said he's in school. Oh. I said, where? He said, he must have been up in the dorm. I said, I went up to the dorm. He says, well, then he came down. I know, like 15 minutes later, I see from the corner of my eye, he's running down the block, coming into the school. I made like I didn't see him. Then he came into the school, and I came around from the other way. I said, oh, my, where have you been? I was looking all over for you. Because I was here the whole time. I was upstairs. I said, I went upstairs. No. But then I went to the other side. So I said, okay, fine. Okay, that's really weird. Okay, you're here now? Fine. Didn't say anything. And I called the parent. I said, listen, I don't know where he was. He says he was here. He wasn't here. I have a feeling it has something to do with the car, but I just have a hunch. That's what I said. So the parent said, no, it's nothing to do with the car. He probably comes to the car and he puts the keys away. He never touches the car. He would never do that. He would never, ever do that. Okay, I left it. Didn't say a word. Not one word. I didn't say one word. Anyway, at 11:45 that night, p.m., they knock at my door. I come to the door. It's the mother, the father, and the kid. And they say to me, Rabbi Palgon, I will never, ever doubt you again. My kid told me that you won't believe this story, but he was in a car accident. And he had to go to auto school because he got a ticket and he had to get the points off. And he went over there and that's where he was. I was like, what? I didn't know. My gosh. So you can't reveal if you do get the information, you have to be careful. You don't want to ever reveal a confidence. If you're telling someone Latoelis, make sure the person you're telling Latoelis is going to handle it with confidentiality. Otherwise, you're causing more harm than good. If he's going to really hurt himself. Like, okay, this story, was he really going to hurt himself? I don't know, Suffolk, you know. But the guy's really doing something illegal or doing something that's very harmful. It's going out at 2 a.m. to a gas station to sell something on eBay. Then you say, okay. Well, I'm sorry, 1 a.m.
What about if it's spiritually, but it's not public? It's more like
a kid has like a smartphone. You know?
Like a kid uses his phone in Shabbat. A kid maybe eats not kosher when he's with his close friends. Or like, is that a job?
Yes, do you know anybody?
It
depends what the Rebbe, you have to know the Rebbe. The Rebbe loves the kid and he wants to help the kids. He's going to spend more time with him. So, yeah, you tell the guy that he's having a real thing. So,
is that little Ellis? Is that?
Something goes by your kavana. If you try to get him kicked out of the school, no. It's not much such a great to Ellis. But one guy once told me that one boy introduced another boy, brought him to a house party with boys and girls, and introduced his friend to bring him to that house. Like, we sent that guy out of this. We sent him out of the school. Like, that's chote machti to do that. So that's that. Sometimes you have to do that. Like, you don't let someone hurt someone just because you want to. The guy is kashala, huh? Yeah. Guy's bringing his friends to places, that's terrible. That's pretty serious. But okay, guys, thank you very much. If Mayor Simcha is not sleeping on the couch.